What's up, everybody? Thanks for listening to the BTOSports.com podcast show. BTOSports.com has teamed up with us to offer you a great deal on your next moto-related purchase. It's easy. Fill up your shopping cart with at least $100 of merchandise and type M-A-T-T-H-E-S in the coupon section during checkout and you are hooked up. One more thing, folks. If you're looking for more Mathis, you're in luck. He's easy to find. Just bookmark PulpMX.com and follow Mathis on Twitter at Twitter.com/PulpMX.
Responsible if it does. What are you gonna do about it anyway? You won't have a head. You have been warned.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com podcast show, brought to you by Trans World Motocross, hosted by Steve Mathis.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com Transworld Motocross Podcast Show. As usual, I'm your host, Steve Mathis. With me on the line is a guy who's come back to America, the great American hero, Jimmy Albertson. Top Jimmy, what's up?
Not much, man. I just got into the got back home on Tuesday, so just trying to enjoy America. You know, I missed it. It's definitely a lot different over in Europe, so it's good to be back home, family and friends and everything.
Yeah, I don't think I'm overstating the case when I say great American hero. Do you?
No, not at all.
No.
Maybe not this year. I kind of started letting everyone down, but it happens, you know.
For those that don't know, Jimmy's a rider that was on a Valley Motorsports team 2 years ago, finishing the top 10 outdoor. I think you were top 10, right? Yeah.
Top 10
outdoors, and then got an opportunity to go over to Europe to contest the GPs for Martin Honda. A great deal. I was super excited for him, and in speaking to him, he was super excited. But here we are at the end of the year. You and your team have mutually agreed to part ways after a not what you expected 17th place in the MX1 class. Talk about your year, Jimmy.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, like you said, I remember talking to you before I went over there, and I was super excited about everything, and that's how it was for, you know, the first 3 months I was living in Europe. I got there in January. I showed up January 2nd in Europe, and was just on the gas. I was riding the best I ever had in my life. I just couldn't believe it, and all the pre-race stuff, I was winning a lot of it, and I went and won the Starcross deal against Crowley and everybody, and it was like I couldn't screw up. Everything was coming so easy, and I was having a great time. And then, all the pre-race stuff kind of ended. I won some Italian championship stuff, too, against a lot of the top guys. But then once that stuff kind of all stopped, and we're getting ready for the season, I just, had a lot of time, just downtime, where I wasn't doing anything. And all I was doing was riding and training, and I got so homesick. It was unreal. Like, I remember a week before the season started, just all I could think about was I was just counting down days until I was able to go home, and it was one of those things. It's like I wanted to change my attitude so bad because I knew it was the wrong way to go about it, but I couldn't. Like, it was, I had no control over it, and a lot of the people were telling me, you need to cheer up, and it's your attitude, it's all mental. I was like, I know all this stuff, I've been. I mean, it's not like I'm a veteran or anything, but I've been racing for professional for 4 years. I know. I mean, I've seen firsthand what mental strength will do to you. I lived with Trey Kennard for 2 years, and watch that guy go through so many different emotional ups and downs, and to finally feel him myself was kind of like, it was scary because, you know, here I am, like, the best shape of my life, and 2 months ago, riding unbelievably good. Like, every time I got on the bike was just like, it was easier than walking. It was just, it was awesome. And then to for it to all slip away like that was really tough.
Right, and yeah, definitely a week before the first GP, the one emotion you shouldn't be having is, I want to go home.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I guarantee you everybody else on that gate was not,
yeah,
was not even close to thinking the same way I was. And, you know, it's not that I didn't want to go out there and kill it. I was trying so hard, like, you know, because that's the only reason why I was over there. I mean, I'm not going over to Europe, but for anything but to race dirt bikes, and that's my life, and that's all I care about. And, you know, being in the gym twice a day and riding, you know, every day, and to show up at Bulgaria and just really not my head being it, but I'm doing all the right things, it was just, it was tough. I think I went, it was a long day. I think I went 19-17 in Bulgaria for 18th overall or something, and it was brutal. I remember showing up, and then the next round was Starcross, and, you know, I did decent there. I think I got sixth the first moto and ran top three for about half the moto, and, you know, it was, people were happy with that, and they were like, oh, you know, good job at sixth place, but, I mean, I still, like, you know, I was still depressed. I still knew that there was something wrong. Like, I came off the track feeling like I was still feeling like I was a failure. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't feel like I'm riding as well as I have been. And,
right.
And it's just kind of a struggle. And, you know, what do you do at that point? Do you tell it? You can't tell your team, oh, I'm homesick, I want to go home. You just, you got to ride it out. You sign a deal, so you come up with your, you know, you come up with your end, you know? And, you know, I got a couple top tens right there in a row, and then I ended up having a big injury in Spain, dislocating my shoulder, and especially after I got hurt, it was just like, man, you know, sitting in Belgium not doing completely anything was real tough. But
yeah, and then you're even more doing nothing to just sit at the walls and think about how much you missed 7-Eleven and stuff.
Yeah, I'm so kidding. How much I miss those hot dogs. But I don't know. Like, I mean, me and you were talking before we started the podcast up. I mean, it's just all the convenience that you have in America. Everything's so easy.
Yeah.
So easy.
No, like, I know. I get that. I travel all the time, and my sister-in-law especially, because I'll tell her, like, I'm like, Europe sucks, and it's not a slam to people who are listening. It's just so different that I'm not a big fan of going. I'm a big fan of going over there for, like, a week at a time. And I lived in Germany, and she can't believe that I say that. And I'm just like, you don't understand. You got to go over there. It's just different.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's worse. It's different.
Everything's a task.
Right, right.
I mean, there's no doubt. Like, in going to the grocery store is a task. Going to get gas is a task. Going to get of an ATM is a task. Because certain ATMs don't accept American cards. And
yeah.
It's like it's a lot. But I mean, the funny part about it is, though, if at the first of the season, like I was saying, like, if you would ask me, will I ever come back to Europe after my contract's up, I would have said, hell no, I'm over this, I'm done, I don't want to be over here anymore. But when it was time to leave there, the last month I was in Europe, I really enjoyed myself. You know, I think
that's because you knew it was ending.
I met some friends, and I kind of had built a home, and I knew the system, should I say. Like, I knew where to go and what to do and fun stuff to do in town. And, you know, like, it was starting to become tolerable. Like, okay, this is all right. So it's like, you know, after that's all done, like, okay, I'm finally used to it. And then it's like, oh, well, it looks like I'm done over here anyways. So.
Yeah, really, huh? Yeah, that's the thing. Maybe because you knew you were leaving. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, that could be another thing too.
But you know, so looking back on it, you made a mistake not coming home after those preseason stuff, huh? Would you change that?
That would be my big thing. After that, like, let's see, after about mid February, I would have came home for the whole month of March,
right?
And just regroup, because
I know.
Bottom line is, I mean, I could see myself going downhill every day that I didn't want to ride, and I rode anyways. Like, I just, I rode slower and slower until finally, like, I'd noticed myself going slower. And I've always been a person that, oh, nobody gets slower. Everyone always just gets faster. Like, that's always been my thing. Like, no one gets slower. Everyone around just gets faster. It looks like you've gotten slower. But I could just physically on the bike feel like I didn't know what I was doing almost. Right. Like, because my head was not in it.
Yeah.
And for the first time in my whole life, I was getting on a motorcycle when I didn't want to be.
Yeah.
And it was a weird feeling for me because being a kid that's ridden, there for a while I was riding every single day, and not any one of those days that I feel like, man, I don't want to be on this bike. I'd rather just be hanging out and not doing anything. Like, I've always just loved to ride my motorcycle, and for it to all of a sudden turn into a job, like, it was kind of, mm-hmm. it sucked.
Yeah, really? You know? Yeah. Well, I know when Brownie did the GPs, he was back all the time. Like, his last stint over there, maybe with Cass. I don't know if that was his last time over there. But he was back all the time, which is weird. But he was putting up with the miles and stuff and flying
back. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, in between races and stuff.
I think that's the way to do it for sure. I mean, yeah. You can't – I stayed over there for 6 months straight without coming back home.
Yeah.
From January to June. And it was – you know, I just remember coming home and, like – I remember when I got home, my friends were all looking at me like I was funny because I was talking weird. Like, I was, my English was screwed up because I was so used to talking to Italians and Dutch people.
Yeah, real slow and stuff.
Saying everything so backwards, talking slow to everybody, and just like, oh, man, what am I doing here?
Yeah, you know, I did one of these shows with Coppins, Josh Coppins, who we both know is one of the great guys in the sport. And,
he's the best guy, man. He's awesome.
He's a good dude, for sure. He was telling me that he thought you would come somewhere around 10th or so because, you know, and I pointed out, well, preseason, man. And he's just like, yeah, it just doesn't mean anything over here for those guys. Like, they don't care about that. Whereas Americans are 100% giver all the time. And he said, you know, that doesn't mean necessarily much what he's doing. It's good for him, but it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be out there kicking ass. You know what I mean? And did you notice GP speed being a little faster than those preseason stuff?
Yeah, they definitely were. They were all faster, you know, once mm-hmm. the season came around. They go into Montova Starcross without riding, pretty much, I think, and for pre-season. That's like their first couple weeks on the bike is mm-hmm. right before that race.
Right.
So they're kind of still fresh and feeling stuff out, and those guys really don't start riding much until right before the season starts.
Yeah. Kind of maybe
it's a long season. It's a lot of traveling, and it's just, you know,
right. Like
to tell you the truth, if I haven't been riding in a couple months and I get on the bike and I ride for 2 weeks straight, that's probably the fastest I'm going to get for a while. You know, like I'm up to speed, back up to riding, fitness, and everything. You know,
mm-hmm.
That's just how it is.
Right. So at the end of this year, was it pretty much, hey, we're disappointed in you, we're not bringing you back for the second year of the deal, and you're like, cool, I'm disappointed in being here, I'm out? Was it kind of like that?
Nah, it's hard to say. I really can't say much about it, but...
Well, was it a big
wanted to be back next year, because I felt like I did the hard part already by staying, you know, by living over there for mm-hmm. the first year and getting used to everything.
Ah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not going to lie. I mean, I should have told him. I go, I know my results have been shitty, you know, and I don't blame you for not wanting to keep me because I know that I haven't been anywhere close to what my potential is. And right. It's not that I'm not working hard. It's not that I'm not trying. I mean, even after I got hurt those few races, I mean, I was coming back after dislocated shoulders like the next weekend in racing and just,
right.
You know, just because I was, you know, I'm the only guy on the team, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. if I don't show up, the truck doesn't show up. So I kind of, it's a lot of pressure for me because I've never been on a factory team. Not only not to be on a factory team, but to be the only rider, it was,
right.
It's like, you know, they're like, oh, you know, you don't have to come to this next race. But, you know, I felt obligated to. So I just, you know, come back and race it anyways.
Yeah, and then, of course, your triumphant homecoming at Glen Helen. You were already wounded going in. And
I was right after I dislocated my shoulder. And then
you took a massive crash in practice down a hill that I didn't see, but everybody I talked to says was ugly.
Yeah, you know, just one of those things. Like, I was still at the point where I wasn't feeling like I was back home, and I was happy to be back home, but it's just like, it's still like, my head's not in it. It's just, it's dangerous racing when your head's not in it. Like, I'll say it 1,000 times, like, it was scary. I wish I wouldn't have been out there, because when you're not in it to go out there and win and, like, do your best, then there's no point in even being out there. And, like it shows, bad stuff happens. I'm so thankful I didn't get hurt that day really bad. I mean,
right.
to come out of that wreck with no serious injuries was just amazing. I mean, I tell everyone, that was the hardest crash I've ever had in my whole life. I mean, I hit so hard. I mean, I literally shit my pants. I hit so hard. I mean, that's how bad it was.
I heard that, yeah.
Like, I know that sounds nasty, but I mean, it was, oh, it was bad.
It was not good. Yeah, looking at your season's results, man, you missed 4 races from injury. You scored no points in 2 races. Another couple motos, but no points. Just your best finish was that 6th in the second round in Italy, and yeah, things just didn't work out from there. But overall, I mean, overall, you happy you did it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I don't take anything back.
Right.
Like, after going over there and living in that environment and dealing with all the stuff that I dealt with this year, I feel like it's made me not a better rider, but just a better person, you know? Mm-hmm. I'll feel like a better rider after it all as well, but more so just a better person, and just
knowing that
I went over there and dealt with a lot of stuff, and like, I never gave up. Like, even though stuff was going as bad as it was, I was never like, I'm just going home. I stuck with it, and, you know, I believe I'm a way better rider than I was last year at this time. And last year at this time, I came off a 6th place at Steel City in the last moto and was doing, you know, riding really well at, mm-hmm. At the Texas races. And, like, right now, I mean, I know that I had a really tough year, but I think it's, you know, it was for the best. I mean, I believe that it's going to make me a lot better rider.
I've always said that the American riders are a bit spoiled, because outside of Southwick, every track's exactly the same, bitching, tilled up, watered, you know what I mean, ruts, perfect and everything. But the European guys, now those guys and you had to deal with some different conditions, huh? Like hard pack and mud and steep sand. I mean, it's such a varied conditions. I love that about GP motocross.
It's gnarly. Like, people have known it. Like, you were saying how, other than Southwick, even Southwick, I watched Southwick on the TV, and that is not sand.
No, no.
Like, I thought it was sand before I went to Europe, and I have been in some sand now. God,
yeah, did you go to? You must have been the Lomel.
Like, you were saying how all the tracks have the same soil.
Right.
They really do.
No, they do, yeah.
You know.
Sawdust and water and tilled up, and there you go, you know.
And, you know, it's funny how much you actually ride on a GP weekend, too. You do a 35-minute practice warm-up, and then you do a 35-minute time qualifying practice, and then you do a 20-minute plus 2-lap race on Saturday, and then your Saturday's done. And then you go to Sunday and do a 20-minute warm-up in the morning, and then 2 40-minute motos.
Yeah.
So by the end of the weekend, you put close to 3 hours, or let's see how much would it, you know, upwards of 3 hours on your bike. And it's like, that's some riding, especially, you know, putting 3 hours in 2 days during the week isn't as bad, but when you're dealing with all the pressures of a race,
yeah, and
it takes it out of you, man. I mean, just Sunday nights, you're whooped.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, especially fighting it in the mud or in the sand or wherever, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there were some races this year where I remember doing a parade lap in the second moto and just coming and lining up on the gate and going, this is more closer to enduro than it is to motocross. Like, David Knight should be here right now because he would 1-1 on the bill, no doubt.
I know I went to Teuchenthal last year, and after Saturday, I walked around the track, and then I told that night we're at Martin Honda, actually, with that cool smoothie machine. Did you guys still have that smoothie machine?
No, we didn't have the smoothie machine this year.
Oh, my God, that was the best. And no wonder why, you know, it didn't work out. But I was sitting with Coppins underneath Martin Honda tent drinking a smoothie, and I said, hey, are they going to fix this track for tomorrow? And he about spit out his food. He was like, no, mate, this is it. I'm like, but it's all ruddy and it's got, and they threw water on it and the water accumulated in the bottom of the ruts. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
And he's just no, this is it. This is it.
No, they don't touch it. It's hilarious. I said the same thing. I was like, sorry, you know, John Vandenberg, my trainer, is like, let's go walk the track, you know, after the last race on Saturday. I was like, you know, we really don't need to walk the track. They're just going to prep it all, you know? And he's like, no, they're not going to prep it. And I was like, well, I better go get my shoes on. I'm really relaxed walking this thing.
Right.
So it's gnarly, and you're right. They water it, and there is seriously lakes in these ruts and these bumps.
Uh-huh. And then like, it'll be dry and dusty on another part of the track.
Yeah. And when they say, hey, this is a hard-packed track, it is asphalt.
Yeah.
And when they say it's a deep sand track,
right?
It's like showing up at the beach and lining them up.
Yeah, I know. I've been to Lomo before with Ferry before the Destinations. Yeah, that's a sand track.
Yeah.
It's
gnarly.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Now it's time to pay some bills.
Thanks for listening to the BTOsports.com podcast show. Please don't forget that BTO is the world leader in aftermarket motocross parts for the bike or body. You'll find deals like a Shoei VFXW helmet for $309.99, 45% off, or Smith Piston goggles for $32.99, 65% off. Your order can be shipped to anywhere in the USA for free, or if you're not in the USA, we ship worldwide. Check it out at BTOsports.com.
Did you get to do well? First of all, I guess who did you make friends with out of all the guys? Did you have a little crew of people that you got to hang out with and chill with?
Yeah, you know, Josh Coppins is a great guy. I mean, he's just every single GP. He's always, you know, there to talk to. He's just a super cool guy to hang out with. And then you know, there's some other racers over there like I don't know, like the LS guys, Guineri and Layoc and
yep.
So it's just all the riders, you know, everyone's so friendly over there as well. Even like Tony Crowley, like you would never believe, like the guy's so down to earth and just friendly. I mean, anybody who has anything bad to say about that guy needs to think about themselves before they say anything because
he's
a class act for sure.
I interviewed him last year after the German race, and yeah, real cool. Seemed like a really great guy, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, just friendly to anybody and everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. He stops, talks, you know. He's a good guy.
What I thought was funny was you saw Caroli and Coppins and even Villeman, because he was racing. They just wander their pits from team to team and hang out. And, like, that doesn't happen in America. Like, they're in the motorhome. The guys are in the motorhome, and you don't see them. They're like the groundhogs.
Yeah, no doubt. No, it's different. Like, I try to explain to everybody, over in Europe, it's almost a lot like the amateur national scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as far as riders and being friendly, like, everyone drives a motorhome to the race. They all drive. They don't fly in. I think Crowley's one of the only guys that flies in and has a motorhome there.
Right.
But they fly, they drive, and they hang out. They all camp together. It's like that. They just walk from, like, motorhome to motorhome and hang out with everybody. And like I said, it's like amateur national. It's kind of cool in that way.
Or another thing that people say is that when they go to race Canadian nationals, they say it's a lot like that, too. Like, the Canadian races are the same way. You just hang out. Everybody goes under each other's tents and whatever, you know? So,
yeah.
Just different from the big dollar American scene.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite track or favorite, you know, favorite moment of racing?
I always like Montova.
Yeah.
Like, that place is cool. And then, you know, my favorite moment of racing over there was definitely, you know, Starcross.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was cool. And then it was good Vulcans Road too, because that was like a real sand race. And I've never been a great sand rider, but I went 8-8 on the day for 8th overall.
Right.
And I think I only lost the second moto from the leader, like, by 25 seconds. And went in a 40-minute moto to only lose by 25 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to be doing something right. That's pretty good. So,
yep.
You know, I was really happy with that race. And, you know, that was kind of a point where I was like, all right, you know, I'm going to get this thing done. But then the next weekend to go and, you know, screw my shoulder up was kind of, like, up and completely down into the ground. But, you know, that was definitely a good moment.
Well, how did you hurt your shoulder? What did you do? What was the crash like?
It was stupid. It was a mud race in Spain, and it was just downpouring on the gate, and it was so rainy, and I'm
welcome
thinking,
to
okay,
Europe.
They're going
to
hold off until the rain stops, and they just They didn't. They just dropped us as the rain was pouring. I basically had to throw my goggles in the first turn.
Right.
And I was running. I think I was running pretty well. I was running eighth, and me and Purcell, I got around Purcell, put kind of a bar pass on, and then he came down the next turn, and he came in under me, and he lost his front end, and it kind of took both of us down. It wasn't like a bad move or anything,
but
took both of us down, and I was down for a long time, and when I got back up, I was way back, and I was coming up this upstep section, and it was just a qualification race, so I was like, all right, I'm just going to finish, you know, get my gate pick, and just going slow, and I was off the side of the track, and the leaders were coming around, and Nigel had shot sideways off the step up in the mud and just landed on the side of my shoulder and popped it right out.
Ouch. Yeah.
So I was like, you know, it's like, can anything else go wrong? Please tell me, you know?
Yeah, let me know. As much as I say that I like the GPs for the soil, you know, the different conditions that really test the riders, what something I don't like, though, and something that a few riders have told me is like, dude, the starts are so unfair. And if you don't get a good practice time to get a good gate pick for your Saturday qualifier, you're F to get a good gate pick for Sun. Like, it never stops. You have to be on point all weekend long, or you're not going to get that gate pick, and then you're not going to get a good start, right?
Yeah, not only that, but you got to be on it in your open practice, the pre-practice before the race even starts. The non-qualification practice, if you're not top of the list, it seems like you're not top of the list all weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't set the tone in your first practice, you're done.
Right.
And it's like that. And a lot of people don't understand, but the gates are angled in the GPs. They're actually, no matter where the first gate is always the shortest to starting the first turn.
Right.
Because they actually angle it to where the outside gate is something stupid, like 30, 40, 50 feet longer.
Yeah. No, so, I know. I don't understand why they do that. I have no clue why they do that, because the start, I don't know. It's mind-blowing to me. They're fixing it at Lakewood, too. They're making the same way at Lakewood.
Oh, they are making it similar.
Yeah,
Lakewood.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It makes no sense at all.
No.
That's it bums me out, because that's how it goes. You line up, and that's another weird thing, is the way that the starting procedure works. You walk down there, and people are just prepping their gates. You don't have to go down there and, like, they don't say, okay, it's your turn to pick. Okay, it's your turn to pick. People just go down there and start prepping gates.
Really? I thought you had to wait.
No, they just go down there and start prepping whatever gate they want. So you got to be like, hey, man, I'm before you, you know.
Right.
It's like you're showing up in a local race, you know.
Guys are out there 3 hours before with pickaxes grooming them. Grooming their start. Yeah, I thought it was used to be where you were in that Parc Fermé, and then you kind of had to wait till it was your turn, and no mechanic, rider and bike, and you had to kind of hold your bike while you kicked away at the rocks. No?
No, it's not that way anymore, I don't think. Like, the mechanic holds your bike. The mechanics, no one else is allowed to touch the gate but you.
It's
weird, because I never prepped my gate when I was a rider. It's like, I don't want to waste energy kicking around dirt, you know?
Yeah.
I'm a mechanic, go down there and do it. But I guess, not going to lie, I got pretty good at prepping gates this last year.
Yeah,
but
that's good.
Yeah, but like I said, like, first guy lines up on the first gate, second pick lines up on the second gate.
Uh-huh.
And that's how it was all season.
Right, right.
The only place it really wasn't like that was Glen Helen.
Yeah. Yeah, true, where Glen Helen, you can pretty much go kind of in the middle or wherever.
You can go wherever. You can pull a whole shot wherever on that gate.
Now, of course, the never-ending internet debate of Euros versus American riders. What's your take on that, and what are your feelings on that?
I don't know. I think if you went and you stuck Ryan Dungey at Lommel, then Crowley would take them down hard. I think if you took Tony Crowley and put him on Millville with Ryan Dungey, I think Ryan Dungey would take Crowley down hard. You know, it's almost like comparing apples to oranges as far as the GP motocross to the American motocross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
But I don't know. This year, like, you saw with the Saul coming over Unadilla, he was strong too.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you right now, Dungey is From what I've seen, it looks like Dungy's just on a complete other level this year, Carmichael.
Yeah, I think, you know, Motocross of Nations is coming up here in Colorado, and it's just going to be a runaway. But not because Dungy's that much better, but because he's better, and it's on American soil with all that, you know, all that stuff. It's going to be another Bud's Creek, I feel.
It is, and I feel really bad, because do I think that Crowley is just as good, possibly even a better rider than Dungy? Yeah, I do. But do I think he's going to even come close to Dungy in Lakewood? No.
Yeah. One thing about
He's just going to be too underpowered.
Yeah.
That 350 is very competitive. The 350 is one of the fastest bikes on the gate in
Europe.
Hold on a
second. Hold on a second. Top Jimmy. Hold on. There's no way that thing's a 350.
Well, I'm just saying, whatever Crowley's on, it's one of the fastest bikes on the gate in Europe.
Yes, I would agree from watching what little I've seen this year, yeah.
If you stuck that bike, like you saw, Leslie, if you stick that bike on an American gate, there's 20 other motorcycles on that line that's faster than it.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. Like, American motorcycles are so much faster than ones over in Europe.
Yeah, is it just, is America more technologically advanced with the teams, the people on the teams, do you think? Or is it so much of a need of just the American way to hop up your bike? Or why is that, do you think?
I'm not sure, you know. I mean, I think a lot of guys in Europe go for the, okay, I want a bike that it's rideable the whole time for the whole 40 minutes. So they don't really focus on building the bikes too strong, which in America, the tracks are a lot smoother, so you want a you got to have a monster.
Right. They rip
those tracks so deep that it's, you know, you have to have one.
Right.
The starts are tilled up so deep that if you're not on the fastest, if you're not on just a fire-breathing bike, you can just forget pulling the whole shot, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I rode that factory Honda at Steel City in 2008, I mean, it was like I didn't even have to try to get a good start. I remember I pulled the whole shot the second moto, and I think I went the wrong direction for a while because I got squirrely coming out of the gate, and then just started coming back over, and it was just like, man, I understand why Shorty, that guy, I understand why he's pulled like 8 whole shots this year.
Yeah, it's crazy. 11. Like, I think he pulled 11 whole shots, almost half the motos.
God, that's awesome.
Yeah. And your bike was a factory Honda from the outside, for sure, looking at all the components on it. There wasn't much to differentiate it from what Shorty and Millsaps and Windham were riding. But I don't know. I was talking to some of the guys at Glen Helen, some of the Honda guys, and they seemed to they told me that it really wasn't what they were running motor-wise. So
Nothing's the same.
Yeah.
Like, the basic bike is the same, but Factory Honda America does a lot of their own stuff.
Their bikes are
way trick.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Yeah, they got the staff behind it as well. You know, so what did you do outside of racing that was cool in Europe? What was the coolest thing you did, or a couple of funny stories, or anything you can that sticks with you, like outside of the racing?
Yeah, man, like, that's the thing. Like, I didn't get to do much. Like,
you didn't see any castles or anything? Or you didn't go see any famous monuments?
Sweden was really cool, and, like, Latvia and those, like, countries up in Scandinavia were pretty fun to go visit. And, but, like, I mean, I really, it kind of sucked because the schedule that I was running with the team didn't allow me to really do anything,
right.
I had to ride every single lap that I did was on a stopwatch, you know?
Tony Alessi's school of...
I really didn't get to enjoy too much. I didn't get to go see the sights like I would have liked to. I mean, there at the end I was, for sure. You know, I kind of knew everything was going south. It was kind of like, you know...
Right. Now...
Yeah, I'm going to enjoy this last bit, you know?
Right.
And... Yeah. To tell you the truth, like, my head going into the last round in Fermo, I was, like, great. I was mentally so there, like, I felt awesome. But I didn't have any physical conditioning. I think I practiced one time in 5 weeks. Like, I didn't have any conditioning, and I just went the last round, but my head was completely like, okay, I'm going home, I'm just going to do the best that I can, you know. On the day, and I was fast and qualifying. I think I was third in time qualifying, and then And then my qualification race, which was only 20+2, like, I battled with the Saul the whole moto. It was, like, awesome. And then I came around to the next day. And I was just, about five laps into the race, I'm thinking, where is the two-lap card? Because I was completely dead.
One thing I noticed when I went over there, and the races I've seen a little bit, Caroli doesn't worry. He's got those guys covered. If they're ahead of him, that's cool. No problem. You know what I mean? Like, he seems to be in great physical shape.
Yeah, he really is. Like, that guy, like, there's been so many times where he sets the fastest lap time of the day on the very last lap of the second moto.
Yeah. Crazy.
Hunting someone down, just, it's unreal.
Did your brother Greg go over much there?
Yeah, you know, he was over there for a while, and then, you know, he went back home, and he bounced back and forth a lot, you know.
Did he? Yeah. Was it nice having him there?
Yeah, it was really good having him there. Somebody to, you know, talk to.
Yeah. Really.
You know, me and Greg have always been together. He's been my mechanic for years, and,
yeah.
We get along great, and it was definitely cool having him over there. I'm trying to think of. There had to been stuff that I did over there that wasn't motocross related. But I just can't think right now, really. You know?
Yeah, that question. You really let me down on that question. It's not that I expect you to tell me about any brothels or anything, but like at least something cool. How crazy is that? Like each town kind of has like a red light district or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's just nuts.
I don't know. It's weird. It's weird going to some cities in Holland and Belgium, and you'll see like girls in the windows.
In the windows,
like,
I know.
Just like for sale.
Yeah, and then just like kids and moms walking by, no big deal. Like here in America, like if an adult video store opens up, you know, within 3 miles of a school, it's shut down or whatever. And over there, it's like a totally different lifestyle deal, you know.
Everything's so sheltered here in America.
Yeah, no, it really is.
You know, I go to a laundromat. I'm washing my gear up from the weekend, and I look in the vending machine, and there's beer in the vending machine.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and it says the sticker on the vending machine says, "Do not buy if you're not over 18." You know, it's some kid that looks to get drunk on a Friday night is going to look at that and go, "Oh man, I'm not over 18. I don't know this."
Yeah. Hey, did your brother tell you about the sweet find that he got at Paula last weekend?
No.
Dude, we were just standing around the Geico truck talking, and he looks down and he kicks away at the sand, and he pulls out a Bon Jovi CD out of the dirt, out of the ground. How awesome is that? Just the Bon Jovi Slippery When Wet CD.
I'll have to ask him about it.
Oh, it was awesome. So we know about Caroli and DeSalle and Philipparts and even Nagel. We know those guys are quick. We know they're fast. But who's a guy that you were like, huh? And like he was super fast and no one really – I mean, we know his name, but we don't maybe appreciate his talents. Is there somebody
there's a couple guys like that. The guy that really stuck out, like, for me that I had no idea before I went over there, if you would have told me his name, I would be like, who the hell is that, was Kamel Leok.
Leok, yeah.
Like, some days that guy is unreal.
Oh, yeah?
Unstoppable.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen him just whoop up on Caroli in some motos, and then the next moto he goes out, and just straight up gets ninth.
Right.
It's like, you know, what happens? You know, where'd that guy go?
What is Estonia? He's from Estonia,
showed up
right?
Every race, it'd be dangerous. But, you know, he might do that. I mean, he might do that at Lakewood. Canell will be there. Race. He's Estonian, so, you know, he'll be there. But who knows? You know, you might see that guy just bust out a moto. You just never know.
Yeah, he's impressive. He's been impressive at those nations a couple times in England, maybe a couple years ago. He was in MX3, so he was racing with Ferry in Ferry's class, and I think he was right up there, yeah.
Yeah. He's a hardcore, you know, up there in Estonia, and that's all those people that really come from up there. Those guys are just, they're all workers, you know, they're all just like.
Like, if you told them they had to go eat those branches and rocks for dinner, they'd be like, okay.
Oh, they'd be like, no big deal. I already had that on Tuesday, but I'll eat it again.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. Hey, congratulations on Trey Kennard's 250 national title. You know, I interviewed him a couple times this year, and I asked him about you, and poor guy, really sounds like he missed you.
Yeah. Shoot, actually, I haven't seen him since I've been back.
Oh, yeah?
I haven't seen Trey since December of last year.
Oh.
And we talk all the time and stuff, but
yeah.
I'm heading down to his place on Monday.
Oh, it's going to be like, you remember in Rocky 3 when Apollo and Rocky were in the surf and
yeah.
like, hugging each other? That's going to be what you guys are going to do, just hugging and high-fiving and... awesome season for him. Awesome comeback, man.
It was. I couldn't be more happier for him, man. A lot of people will be like, oh, well, he really hasn't had a tough streak. Too bad, you know. But from what happened there, and he winning the first championship that he was ever in, was, and then to be put up on such a high level, a high pedestal, and then all of a sudden to have to try to match that being as young as he was really tough. And for him to, like, come out this year, and even after the first few rounds, just not going the way he wanted to, you know, and just all of a sudden picking up and then win after win, and then I just told him, I talked to him for the last race, and I'm like, it doesn't matter what happens to Paula, you still killed it this year.
Right.
Like, nobody won as much as you did, like,
It
don't matter if you show up at Paul and go score 2 points on the day. You're still the man, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, he won 5 nationals this year, which, I mean, is over double what his next guy won, you know?
Oh, yeah.
No doubt about it. Like, you could make a case that even though Purcell seemed to have it locked up, Trey really deserved it. He won almost double what everybody else won. So, more than double, you know?
Yeah, that's just the mental side that I was talking about. I mean, just took one win, and it's just like, boom. That's how it is.
I can't help but notice how his surge came on after he started working with a certain guy from...
I'm waiting to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just putting it out there, bud. I'm just putting it out there.
He loves working with Timmy. Every time I've talked to him about it, like, you know, he can't say enough good things about the guy. My brother actually met him at Paula and was just like, man, Tim Ferry, he's just an awesome guy.
Your brother?
And of course, I've raced Timmy, but I haven't really sat down and talked to him.
Your brother?
Talked to him much, but he always seemed like a class act every time I've talked to him.
Dude, the guy just... drips class. Just leaks it.
Drips class.
Anyways, enough about that. So, what's next for you? What's the deal? You're shopping for a ride, I guess, right?
Yeah, I'm shopping, you know, like...
Who is this?
Tough this year, and I don't know. I want to pick up the phone and start calling people, but it's almost like, you know, should I wait till a little more stuff pans out before I start calling teams up? But, you know, I made my first kind of call around yesterday. I've been sending some emails, and it's just like, it's tough in my situation. I don't want to sit here, and I don't want to call 4 different people and tell them the same sob story. You know, I'm to the point right now, it's like, hey, you want me to ride for you? And people are going to ask me about what happened in Europe and, you know, what happened over there, why did it not go your way? And I could sit and I could talk to him for hours about it.
Right.
But I don't want to talk about it, you know?
I could be wrong, but I don't think, like, you finished top 10 when you were here last time and you struggled there this year, but I can honestly think, I don't think anybody would be like, oh, I don't think anybody would write Jimmy Albertson off. Do you know what I mean? Like, everybody, I think, knows how tough it is to go over there. Like, I don't know. I just would think that no team manager would be like, oh, I don't want to hire him. He's slow. Well, no. Like, he had to go to move to Europe, and he lived by himself, and he got hurt. And, like, do you know what I mean? I don't know. I could be wrong, but I wouldn't think that your season in the GPs would be held against you. I mean, obviously, you're not going to get a factory Honda ride out of, you know, your season, but why couldn't you get back to where you were on a level that paid you a little bit of money and put you, did good results? So
that's all I want. That's exactly all I want. I don't expect to be on a factory team. To tell you the truth, I don't really want to be right now. I want to be right where I left off it with where I left, and I believe that with, you know, like the teams I rode for, Bally and Troy Lee the last year before I came over, and those are great teams. Those are teams that you can do damage on if you're in it to, you know, go out there and do good. And that's what I'm looking for, just seeing a team like that. I gotta pound the phones a little more, but I remember coming home and I did some riding before Brazil for the first time in America just with my friends and like my brother. And I just rode at a local track right down the street on a stock bike, completely stock suspension, everything. And I felt the best that I had all year. Like,
well, that's just because you had 24-hour Burger Kings within a mile of you.
Yeah, I had me a McMuffin for breakfast. That's why.
Jesus.
Seriously, just like being happy while you're on your bike is just the only way to be good. If you're pissed off, if you're not happy with your life, then you're not gonna succeed in anything.
That's funny you say that though. Like, I don't think people maybe realize, like, even dudes like me, you know, I'm this tubby guy that goes to the races and I watch and I report on the races I get paid to, but there's so much more going on behind the scenes than what a guy's results are. And maybe we all need to remember that, including myself, more often. Like, who knows? Maybe he broke up with his chick, or maybe he caught his chick in an orgy, or you know what I mean? Like, like there's all these things.
Yeah.
So, you know, somebody watches Jimmy Albertson.
That happens every day.
Oh, all the time. especially in the SoCal motocross scene.
Oh, no doubt.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, people are watching Jimmy Albertson going, what's wrong with him? But it's like, dude, you don't understand. He's all week, he's sat in his house and wants some water, you know, and couldn't buy any.
He's thirsty. Give this guy some water.
He's so thirsty. Well, this goes back to people who are listening. This goes back to Jimmy was telling me before we started how he was trying to get water one night and everything was closed, and that's just the way it was. And it's just an inconvenience of living over there. But, you know, just what I'm saying, like, just there's a lot of things that go on with you guys outside that affect your racing.
Yeah, and, you know, just another big example is look at Tiger Woods right now.
Absolutely.
The guy sucks right now, and it's not because he's shitty. He's got so much stuff going on that's bigger than golf. Golf is just put aside. You know, he can't fucking swing a club right now because there's so much stuff running through his head that's, I would say, more important to him than golf. It's screwing them. It's screwing them into the ground. And that's how I was. I was sitting there in my apartment in Belgium thinking, am I really happy right now? You know, would I be happier on the same team that I was last year in the States around all my friends, seeing all my buddies on the weekends? And not that I didn't meet some great people in Europe that were just good friends, but I don't know. It's you know what I'm talking about. It's just different.
Yeah, no, I remember when I was there, I lived there for 2.5 months, I think, in Germany. And this was before the internet. Well, it wasn't before. It was with dial-up internet. And I finally got my dial-up internet to dial the right numbers. And it was like, I mean, I was so happy. It was unbelievable. I could like look at English, a website or so. You know what I mean? It's the little things when you get over there that you get so pumped about, you know?
Oh, no. I'll tell you a good one. Yeah. Like, in Italy, there is no English speaking channels on TV.
Yeah,
none at all. Except they do have MTV, and MTV is all dubbed over in Italian too.
Uh-huh.
But every morning you'll get Music Video Hour, and a lot of the music videos are all American. So like, they're or all English. So like, you know, there'll be a few Italian songs, or whatever, and then there's just some English music videos that come on.
Yeah.
And I would sit there in the morning with my cereal, and I just have the biggest smile on my face.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's the shittiest music alive. I could be listening to Prince.
Yeah,
and just with ear to ear grin, going, life doesn't get any better than this.
Yeah,
you know?
I know. When you're over there, you feel like you could basically like you'd give anything to go out with that Christine Amanpour chick from CNN, you know, the English chick, like she's English, but she's the only thing that comes on CNN or whatever. You're like, oh god, she's so hot, and it's just because she's speaking English.
You know, yeah, no joke. That's another thing about people over here. They're always like, oh man, those Italian girls or those European girls.
Uh huh.
Man, I'm gonna tell you right now.
Yeah.
Nothing, those European girls are not that great.
Nothing beats Anaheim 1.
Jesus, I know, man. And then it's funny, as you go over there, though, and they're like, you talk to the guys, and they're like, oh, the American women, you know, like, it's all the other way around. So people ask me about it, I'm like, well, you know, from what I've seen, which I don't go out much, I don't get out of the house much, but we got a pretty good over in the United States.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's what, like, you got to think about those guys coming over here. Like, just how much of a shock it is. Like, you know, like even Rattray or somebody, I mean, he's South African, but he's been over there for so long, or Langston, you know what I mean? It's still a change, and obviously they like it much better. They're all staying here, but, you know, it's something to think about. Hey, what do you make on just Ustream in general running the GPs? You know, lots of controversy over here. No prize money. Everybody buys a ride. Sometimes in Brazil, there was barely anybody on the gate, just over 20 people. What's your take on the way they run things, good and bad?
Well, you know, there's always going to be a bad guy in whatever you do.
Right.
There's got to be someone that you got to point the finger at and say, oh, this is why this sucks. You know, that's just how it is. Uh-huh. In any organization that there is, there's somebody over in AMA Motocross where, again, you know, someone's going, oh, well, this is why this is fucked up, you know.
Right.
It's just how it is, you know. People badmouth, you know, the long go about a lot of stuff, but you know what? That's just business. Sorry, you know.
Yeah.
Bottom line is, he's still making the series happen, and he's still giving, you know, 20-some motocrossers jobs and not teams, you know, jobs to go to the races. Like, it's just how it is. I'm not going to sit here and badmouth any promoter, you know.
Yeah,
maybe he's not doing it. Maybe he's not doing it to quite the standards that everybody else wants him to do it to, but you know what? He's out there, he's doing it, and,
yeah.
You know, whatever. Do I think that Davey Coombs is, you know, got it going on with his MX Sports series? Yeah, I do. I think that series, the way it was run last year, I did in 2009, like, I was stoked with it, you know?
Right.
It was such a good series. But do I think the FIM series is good, too? Yeah, sure, it's good.
Yeah. What's the one thing you would take from the GPs and bring it over to America? See, with me, this is going to sound dumb, but I would take those wash bays. That's a good idea.
Wash bays are good, but I almost think the biggest thing that would be badass in the United States is the pit lane.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Yeah, you're right.
Pit lane is sick, man.
Right, with little boxes and everything, and team qualifying.
Yeah, little boxes, and you got your own TV screen with lap times. Every team's got their TV screen with lap times, and they got the TV screen that has the race playing live.
Right.
It's badass. So and on top of that, when you come in, it's not such a mess when people come in to the pits. Like, you ever notice how big of a mess it is? Like, you never know where your pit board's at when you come around
right.
the first lap.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like looking to see, you know, luckily, you know, Greg's about 9 foot tall, so his arm almost hits me in the face. But, you know, in America, it's like, you know, it's just a mess of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. That's one of the cool things of the pit row. And the wash bays are pretty sick, though, too.
Yeah, I guess maybe I take my wash bay answer back and I say pit lane. In Germany.
Yeah, up on the bandwagon.
I know. In Germany, they gave me an all-access pass, so I was up and down that thing. And, yeah, it's pretty cool. The teams bring, like, you know, exhausts and tires, and they put it all into their bay. And you guys would pull in and just sit there, take a break, drink some water, watch the TV, watch the times, head back out. Like, it was pretty organized. You're right about that.
Oh, yeah, it's real cool. Yeah. Like, I finally learned by the end of the season that it's okay to come in during practice and chill out for a while.
Yeah.
Like, those first few rounds, I rode the entire practices.
Well,
and I was so tired after the end of practice that I was like, man, I got to race.
Yeah, that's how they do it here, though. Like, balls out, dude. Like, you know, Southwick, well, this year they started, the first 5 minutes of the first practice is not timed. And but then, dude, it's on.
Oh yeah,
you got to make it happen. And a lot of times,
that was always my advantage in the United States. Is I was pretty good at doing two laps on the track and then doing my fastest lap time of the
qualifier. Day. Yeah.
Like, I was always really good at that. And I was usually always top 10 in qualifying times.
Right.
You know, there was a couple times I was top 5 in 2009, and you know, that was just how I was. And then I'd go do that in Europe. And it just does not work. You know, it just doesn't. Like, all your fastest lap times will come at the end of practice. But for one, they water the living shit out of it before every single practice.
Yeah.
So if you try to do your fastest lap on the first couple of laps, you just, you know, kiss it goodbye because the track's so dang muddy. So all the fastest lap times, I remember this last weekend at Fermo, when I pulled in, I was fastest qualifying time, and
nice.
The clock said zero.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, I'm the fastest. And then before I knew it, there's five guys, or I was fifth by the time it was
four. Like, four guys were on their last
four
lap.
Four guys had got around me.
That's funny. Yeah, that's funny. You're like, damn you. Actually, yeah. You know what? I would take that smoothie machine over to America.
Yeah, smoothie machine. I never got the experience.
I can't believe they didn't have a smoothie really machine. Yeah, I can't believe they didn't have the smoothie. They had it. Yeah, you know who showed it to me? It was Wobbles. Wobbles.
Yeah.
Wobbles told me I got to have the smoothie machine, so I did. Well, right on, man. Are you going to Destinations?
Oh, yeah, I'll be there, man. Cool. I actually think I'm going to help the Ustream TV crew out a little bit with some interview stuff.
Oh, sweet.
So I'll be there early.
Oh, right on. Okay, good. Well, hey, thank you for doing this, man. I appreciate it. I think it's a good education on a lot of things for a lot of people, this podcast. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. It's a lot different. You know, there's a lot of stuff that a lot of people don't know that are behind the scenes.
Yeah, and
I'm glad to do it.
Yeah, sorry it didn't work out, but in one way I'm not, because now you're gonna be around to make us all laugh this year. So
yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it, man. I miss Supercross a lot. Just sitting there in my, you know, on my computer watching the Supercross the day after, I was like, man, you know, I really want to be out there racing Supercross. So I'm pumped about everything this year.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Right on. Well, thanks, Top Jimmy, and stay in touch, and I'm sure I'll see you around.
All right, man. You gonna be at the Nations?
I will.
All right. Well, I'll see you there, sir.
Yep. See ya.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
This has been the BTOSports.com podcast show, brought to you by Trans World Motocross. Don't forget to check out some of our past shows, including motocross legends such as
the Beast from the East, Damon Bradshaw.
It got to the point where I didn't want to leave home, and once I got to the race, I wasn't into it. If I wasn't going to give 100%, I'm not going to take their money.
The working class hero, Doug Henry.
It was definitely an emotional moment for me, just thinking to myself, that's it, you know, and it's amazing the stuff that goes through your head in a short amount of time of the things that, you know, that I was going to miss.
The Dogger, Ron Machine.
Until you really open your ears and you want to listen to what they're saying, it's like beating a dead horse. And I know from personal experience, did anybody ever sit me down? Of course they did. Everybody did.
Pro Circuits, Mitch Payton.
There's two ways to make the money. One is you can sign for money, or two, you can earn the money. I'm a high believer in earning the money. I think they ride better when they earn the money.
Seven-time Jeremy McGrath.
I was so mad, like so disappointed and so frustrated that I had pulled pick and I left. Every point counts. I could kick myself to this day for not just riding around in tents. It's been no problem. My ego got in the way, you know?
The O Show, Johnny O'Mara.
Stuff that you'd sit there if you didn't even want to ride it, you just wanted to just look at it all day. I mean, I got a chance to test all that. I like that era I was in. I really do.
Search Mathis on the iTunes Store to find these and many more great podcasts. I won't let this die. You know I've got this bad up in the atmosphere. Another